from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nate Taylor, who is with us here on the phone, is locked. I think we're good now. Nate, you got us? What's going on, man? Our Chiefs insider. You're not surprised by Kadarius Toney being cut reportedly today.
Yeah. Hey, fellas. Thanks for having me on. No, I'm not surprised. This was, you could argue, inevitable, probably halfway through training camp, just because of the inconsistency in terms of, him being available for every practice of training camp. I mean, that was sort of the first test for Kadarius Toney, was getting through training camp healthy and actually proving his talent and his value to the team. But look, Andy Reid's been frustrated, I think, for more than a month now in terms of Kadarius Toney's lack of progress, lack of development, a lack of finding a role within the offense. So what the Chiefs have been doing really since they sort of tried to, you know, feature him in the preseason finale against the Chicago Bears was trying to find anyone who would take Kadarius Toney, because there's a, like, I think about a $2.4 million cap hit with them, waiving him today because he has not, you know, cleared 4 years of accrued service. So you can't just release him and get that money back. What we learned today with the Chiefs waiving Kadarius Toney is that there was no team willing to trade for Kadarius Toney in exchange for a 7th-round pick, right? That's what you learned last night with someone like Cam Thomas. Hey, you know, young, somewhat developmental pass rusher, sure, we'll take your 7th-round pick. Nice to doing business with you. Nobody wants to do that with Kadarius Toney, which tells you how far he's fallen from a guy with all types of talent as a former 1st-round pick to now being on waivers, and we'll see if someone claims him. But no team was willing to help the Chiefs from a salary cap standpoint while also giving up a draft pick.
How would you like grade out his time in Kansas City? Because we there's obviously plenty of lowlights. You also have the punt return that helped him win a Super Bowl. So how do you view the trade now that it's done?
Yeah, so this is something that I did with Charlotte Carroll of The Athletic, one of our Giants writers. We did sort of a look back, you know, a year after the trade, right? And at that time, I argued that the Chiefs had won the trade, that it could only get better. Sure, Kadarius Toney has an injury history, but look, they won the Super Bowl. I think if I have to be as honest and judicial and as, you know, objective as possible, I still think you would probably grade the trade a C+. It's not a failing grade. It's not a B or an A, which is obviously what you hope for when you give up essentially a 3rd-round pick for Kadarius Toney. But it's still a C+ because of his ability to really give the Chiefs just another option in 2022 who was viable. And this is really a testament to the magnified brilliance and all-world talent of Patrick Mahomes, right? I will never forget Marcus Spears telling me during the week of Super Bowl in 2022 that, Nate, they got Kadarius Toney to want to play football again. Like, he did not want to play football for the New York Giants. And Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid got him to kind of meet the apex moment of his career. Guys, I don't know how we could ever forget this, but that trade is successful for 3 reasons. It is the idea that he was A, healthy and available for Super Bowl Sunday in 2022. He has the most memorable punt return in Super Bowl history. He then comes back and has the corn dog play, which he runs to perfection, which obviously just embarrasses the Eagles secondary. He's wide open for another touchdown. And then later on in the game, he's the one who has the frame of mind to tell Patrick Mahomes, hey, even though we lined up in the wrong formation, even though you think the play is technically for me, you should actually do it to Sky Moore, because the Eagles' secondary is so bad that if we just motion Sky Moore across the field, yeah, like we're going to, he's going to be wide open. And Patrick Mahomes trusts Kadarius Toney, and look at that. Sky Moore's first touchdown is as wide open as you could ever be in a football field. So they won the trade still to this day because they won a Super Bowl with Kadarius Toney. Everything after that has been an utter disaster because he was supposed to be the number one receiver last year. As you guys played previously, he had the most disastrous start to an NFL season I think I've ever seen in my time covering football, which is, hey, you have four droppable passes, one of which goes back for a pick six. The other one was supposed to put you in field goal range to help you win the game in the last minute, except that drop basically ensured your loss. And then, of course, he never got it back on track. You know, he was basically cooked for the latter part of the season because he was too much of a liability. And then the coaching staff basically lost faith in him midway through training camp.
If it wasn't already done, it was certainly done once Juju Smith-Schuster came into town.
Yes.
What are your expectations statistically for Juju? I've been called a hater because I said, I don't know, 30 catches for 290 yards, Nate. Like, I'm not out of control. He's still the sixth wide receiver on this team. Or are they going to treat him differently than that?
They'll try to treat him differently, and then it may eventually revert back to your projection. I think, hey, if you get 400 yards out of Juju Smith-Schuster, that's amazing. And technically, he could kind of do that, because what I think Juju realizes, and I think what the Chiefs realize, is, hey, he's still a sure-handed, really good route runner underneath end-zone coverage. And guess what, kids? If Xavier Worthy pops the way the Chiefs believe he will, you're going to see a lot more shell coverages, which is, hey, try not to take the top off the defense, but hey, there's going to be so much wide open space underneath for guys like Rashee Rice and Travis Kelce, and now you enter Juju Smith-Schuster. So hey, again, the expectation as of right now is that Rashee Rice will be available for the start of the season. You know, the league is going to let the legal process continue as long as it needs to continue. But if something were to happen to Rashee Rice from an injury standpoint, it's nice to have Juju Smith-Schuster kind of be that same player. He even acknowledged today with us, hey, it was really cool to see how I fit the offense sort of perfectly next to Travis Kelce in 2022. And then they really replicated that with a rookie wide receiver with a similar body type as someone who could make yards after the catch, because obviously he's younger. He doesn't have the wear and tear as Juju Smith-Schuster. But there's going to be times where you're probably going to see bunch formations, I think especially in short down situations where, hey, if we need a third and four, we can stack a trips formation with Travis Kelce, Rashee Rice, Juju Smith-Schuster, and one of those guys is probably going to win a one-on-one matchup to keep the chains moving. So if he does that, you know, 10 times, you know, throughout the season, again, if he has somewhere, like you said, 290 yards to 400 yards on a good day, a couple touchdowns in the red zone, keep the defense honest, he will be a much more productive player than anything you could have expected out of, and let's get the names right, ladies and gentlemen, Sky Moore, Justin Ross, and Kadarius Toney. By him just arriving, he is a more reliable option than any of those three players I just named, who were viably fighting for one of the last roster spots as of a week ago.
We're talking to Nate Taylor, our Chiefs insider from The Athletic. As we're talking with you, there's a couple reports out there that Denarik Prince is also getting cut. Does that surprise you at all? How do you think the backfield is going to shape up? Because we know Carson Steele impressed, and we already knew he was going to make the team. But is there a veteran option out there? What are they doing with Clyde?
Yeah, so the way I projected it out on my 53-man roster right after the Chiefs preseason finale is holding true, which means, hey, they would like Denarik Prince back on the practice squad. That is the indication I got pretty much right after the preseason finale game against the Chicago Bears last week. So now you have basically a three running back room slash fullback, if you want to, you know, technically be what Carson Steele is on the roster. He's technically a fullback, but he's essentially your second running back. Clyde Edwards-Helaire will probably slide into that Jerick McKinnon role. That's why he re-signed with the team in the summer. So he'll be your third down back if, again, he's healthy, if, again, he's, you know, if he doesn't have any issues with the, you know, PTSD that he's been dealing with. He's been practicing pretty much ever since the preseason finale against the Chicago Bears, so the Chiefs feel comfortable with him. They obviously know what he can do as a veteran. So you have three running backs, and then, yeah, they'll do some sniffing around in the free agent market for a running back of a veteran status. Because they would like to have four running backs, but if that doesn't happen, if he clears waivers again, Denarik Prince will probably be back on the practice squad as your fourth running back if you're not able to upgrade at that position during the free agency sort of veteran market that they're obviously going to be in over the next, you know, 24 to 48 hours.
Speaking to our Chiefs insider over at The Athletic, Nate Taylor here on 96.5 The Fan. Nate, you had mentioned Cam Thomas earlier. Obviously, a former third-round pick, they give a seventh. He's a rotational defensive end at a position they don't have a lot of depth at. But I think they don't have a lot of depth at it because I don't trust Felix Anidike-Uzomah. Are there people in the organization you talk to that are still optimistic about where his development is going?
Yes, there are plenty of people in the organization who are still optimistic about Felix. I think that, though, is a clear contrast in the holy smokes, we cannot use him right now from the coaching staff, right? The coaching staff would like to use Felix on, like, I don't know, 15 to 20 snaps. They're going to be forced to do that, but are those 15 to 20 snaps going to be productive or as good as they would have hoped going into year two after basically getting a redshirt year to really learn what it's like to be in the NFL? And obviously you have Chris Jones, you have Mike Dana, you have George Karloftis. He's going to learn from all those guys, and he's going to come back a more professional, you know, his body's going to be in a better shape. He won't have to deal with the injuries that he had as a rookie, and he'll be ready to go, right? Right? Right?
Uh-huh.
He had moments in training camp, and then that sizzle sort of dissipated as training camp progressed. And look, Andy Reid runs the hardest training camp in the league for a reason, right? It is to prepare you for week one and to have success in September. So we'll see if that's the case. But it has not gone as well as I thought it would for Felix. And I do think Cam Thomas is supposed to create some competition. It's supposed to create some urgency from your former first-round pick. He'll get plenty of run this season because of the injury with Charles Omenihu. The fact that, you know, the Chiefs have said, hey, maybe he can come back around October, you know, around that Halloween area. If not, that we can sort of ease him back in mid-November. So that's still technically the range for, you know, Charles Omenihu, who's going to be on the PUP list and you know, basically going to, you know, get a slow rebuild after his ACL injury in January. But for Felix, it's like, hey, can you show something? Can you show a flash or two on a third down when Mike Dana is a little winded? If George Karloftis needs to take an occasional snap off just to get, you know, some energy back, can you fill in? Or if that's not going to happen, then all of a sudden you're going to have to put Chris Jones on the edge to really get some juice on that side of the defensive line with your hopes that, hey, maybe, you know, Tershawn Wharton can still be effective. You still have, you know, Mike Pinnell, you still have Derek Nnadi. They actually have more depth on the defensive tackle than they do at the edge position. But it can turn if Felix starts to make real progress week after week after week throughout this second season. He'll get another chance, obviously, if he stays pretty static in terms of his production and his value level going into year three. But yeah, it's not a great sign that your former first round pick has not really encouraged the coaching staff, so the front office feels like it has to go out there and get somebody who can be an active body just for an insurance policy. Even though he, you know, if you look at all the clips of Cam Thomas, it's like, well, they're not going to be in a two-point stance, and you're not going to play outside linebacker, but you know what? He's healthy, and he can at least rush the passer. So let's take a flyer on him. We can obviously get another seventh-round pick back in an eventual trade moving forward. But, yeah, they need Felix to be a rotational contributing player probably by, like I said, Halloween, because if that doesn't happen, then all the burden, all those snaps go back to Charles Omenihu.
What are you hearing on quarterback two? We know throughout camp they were hoping someone emerge at that spot and never happened. They were rotating guys in. You think they feel good enough where they don't have to go outside the organization, or do you think that's an area that they're exploring?
So here's a difficulty, right, with being the Super Bowl champions. I even wrote this in The Athletic. I just said, hey, V should just make some calls about cornerbacks, right? The problem is where you are on the waiver claim, you're dead last. You're not going to get anybody of any value at that position. So I think by default, it's probably going to be Joshua Williams, ladies and gentlemen, with Jalen Watson coming in as a rotational guy, as a third, you know, cornerback on the outside if you want to move Trent McDuffie to the nickel position. Now, of course, Chamari Conner will be involved as well. It's also fun that the Chiefs finally acknowledge that Chamari Conner is the cornerback, because we have no cornerbacks. Now, with all this said, you know, I thought it was fascinating that the Chiefs were like, hey, we could go sign a veteran, but Stephon Gilmore, not really available anymore. You know, there's other guys available, but they haven't really made a call yet. So they're going to see this thing through, I think, for the first couple of weeks. And then if it has to get better, then, hey, that's the position you sort of circle for the trade deadline. But I just think Joshua Williams is probably their best bet right now at the cornerback two position. They tried Jalen Watson in the preseason finale. It was not good. So it's going to take him time to get back into football shape, to get him back into, you know, using proper technique, identifying when there's a run and when there's a pass. But he's still got capable talent in that body. It's just, hey, he's coming back from a shoulder injury. He had a, you know, surgery in the offseason. He's just further along than the team would have wanted to. But that happens sometimes. It's not like he has a setback. It's just going to take longer than you would have anticipated. So I know they're going to be sniffing around. I know they're going to be making waiver claims, but it's just like, hey, you won the Super Bowl. You got to wait 31 spots. And that probably means that any cornerback of any kind, of any talent, is probably not going to be available to you. So therefore, Joshua Williams, let's see how much we can get him ready for the season opener against the Baltimore Ravens.
Do you expect any surprises remaining in the cuts, or is it just going to be everyone we think? Like, is there a chance McColl or Sky or any of these guys we think are on the team, Nate, are gone?
No, I think this is it, guys. You know, I think from a business standpoint, too, you have to make these decisions now. You don't want to bump up right up against the 3 o'clock deadline because you want to make phone calls, you know, and try to get guys back on the practice squad as soon as possible if they clear waivers, of course. So you're trying to do like four things at once today. You're letting guys know, hey, we appreciate everything you did, but we're going to go in a different option. But, hey, keep your phone nearby. Also, can we make a trade with somebody? And, oh, by the way, if no one wants to take Kadarius Toney for a seventh-round pick, we might as well just make this decision now so that him and his agent can sort of see what their market is moving forward after, you know, the waivers or if he's going to get claimed or not. I think Sky Moore is on the team because he's probably one of your kickoff returners, and he does know all three positions, right? And he has been professional, or I should say more professional, more accountable than Justin Ross or Kadarius Toney. That's why he's still on the team. It's not because of his pick allocation, right? It's not just because he's a second from around pick. It's actually because he's been the most professional of the three guys who were really battling for that final spot. And look, I love Nico Remigio, but hey, you could probably sneak him back onto the practice squad if necessary.
Yeah.
And you could probably elevate him at times if you need to during the regular season based on injuries. Again, if you need some help on special teams. I'm trying to think, you know, Derek Nnadi was playing in the last preseason game. It wasn't great, but he's also coming back from an elbow injury. So he may be a surprise cut because you think, hey, he doesn't have to clear waivers. He's already got the recruit time, so we can sort of release him and bring him back to the practice squad as a veteran free agent. That may happen. You could see that already earlier today with Irv Smith Jr. I'm going through the list. That's pretty much it, guys. You know, it's a good sign. I should say that Wanya Morris practiced today, yesterday. It's not a serious injury from what we saw against the Chicago Bears game. So, obviously, he's your swing tackle. So, you don't have to go out and sign a veteran tackle at the position. He should be on the roster. He should be, obviously, available for week one as well. So, outside of that, it's just, hey, do you keep C.J. Hansen? You know, I think Hunter Norzad's on the roster. But, hey, do you want to have 9 defensive linemen, or do you want to have 10 offensive linemen? Those are sort of the questions I would think they're still probably going through right now. But this roster was stacked when they arrived in St. Joseph. And I think my early projections, fellas, I think there was only 5 spots that were really up for grabs when training camp started. And Juju Smith-Schuster took one of them. Cam Thomas took one of them. Carson Steele took one of them. And so there really isn't much drama around this 3 o'clock deadline.
Last one, Nate, before we let you go. Next week, of course, Thursday night, I mean, we get this thing going. What's any update? What's the latest on Hollywood Brown? I think everybody assumes he's out week one, but have you heard anything on if they feel like there's a better timeline now?
Yeah, I think if you're a Chiefs fan, and I think even for the team themselves, September 15th, right? That's week 2 against the Cincinnati Bengals. That is now the best case scenario based on what my understanding is. It doesn't make the Chiefs really any, and I think this is partly because of Juju Smith-Schuster's arrival. I think I need to say that as well. Like, Juju kind of played tongue-in-cheek today when we were like, hey, you think you're going to be available week 1? He's like, I don't know, guys. I'm still learning the playbook. And it's like, come on, he's got a week. He'll be on the field. But now that you have Juju into the fold, you don't have to rush someone like Hollywood Brown on the field on opening night against the, you know, Baltimore Ravens, because they did that a year ago with Kadarius Toney, and it went horrible. Now, obviously, these are two different players, but I do think based on the severity of the injury, the collarbone, him giving ample amount of time to rest, the fact that you get 10 days from week 1 to week 2, I think now all that we're going to learn is he going to be available in a maybe limited role against the Cincinnati Bengals in week 2, or is the return date going to be more conservative, because that's what Andy Reid typically likes to do, if you don't have another injury at the position, then, hey, we'll get him back for September 22nd against the Atlanta Falcons on the road in prime time. And that can maybe open up our offense because we've showed a couple things on film in the first 2 weeks, and now the Atlanta Falcons have to worry about this added piece into the offense as well based on how successful Xavier Worthy does as a rookie. So I don't think it's smart, and I think the Chiefs are wise enough to know that you should not push Hollywood Brown for week one. But at the same time, I think week two against the Cincinnati Bengals is definitely a possibility at this point.
Nate Taylor, our Chiefs insider from The Athletic. Great update, man. Appreciate it. And we'll really get this thing going next week.
Yes, sir, man. I can't wait. Hallelujah. We're almost.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
There.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.